Welcome, listeners, to the WoW Raidcast with your hosts Shroomy, Arion, and Kung Pao Panda. Welcome, gentlemen. How glad to have you back today. We are working on episode 8 today, I believe. Is that not correct?
I believe that is correct. I think this one drops Heroic Thunderforge Bracers.
Excellent. I've been waiting for those. So, I think we've pretty much beat PTR into a dead horse, but there's a couple of things I kind of wanted to pick at today. I noticed that it looks like they're stepping into the tweaking phase. I saw a Twitter blue post from one of the Blizz devs that said they're getting ready to just start balancing things, so we can definitely start looking forward to some kind of PTR, I'm sorry, a 5.4 announcement. I'm thinking probably in the next 3, maybe 4 weeks at the longest, but they're already kind of putting some stuff out. One of them that really got my attention was the Connected Realms. The way that it says that they're going to, well, they've pretty much explained how the Connected Realm works, but I noticed it said that Connected Realms is a set of two or more standard realms that have been permanently or seamlessly linked. So I think everybody's just kind of made assumptions based on how the Connected Realms will work. Like, they're just going to lump a bunch of realms together and see how it works. I think, in my opinion, what is going to happen is they're going to put maybe like a couple of medium pop realms together to make either a high pop realm or at least a close to a high pop realm. And then maybe do like 3 or 4 low pop realms to get like the same population across all the realms.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what their target realm population is. That would be an interesting number to know what they have, because I'm sure they're not going to want to make them look like Illidan or, Stormrage or things like that.
I'm thinking somewhere along those same lines as well. I'm not going to like this, but I think what they're going to do is they're just going to keep the balance the same. Like, if your server is 50-50 the way mine is, it's going to remain 50-50. You're just going to be you're going to combine with other 50-50 realms, just so instead of having, like, we have, I believe, 50,000 players on our realm, but that's only 25 each faction. So instead of having 25,000 or 2,500 each faction or whatever, we're going to have maybe somewhere along the lines like 10,000 on each faction. But it'll be interesting to see what they determine as their, like, alive realm population number is. If it's something like, we want 100,000 players per realm, or do they want 75,000, or do they want 10,000? What does Blizzard consider a vibrant realm? You know, a realm that you can actually do pickup groups on, that you can kill the world bosses on, that you don't have to use things like open raid and open queue to get those things done. I really hope that this works out the way that a lot of people have been talking about, and I really hope it does bring life back into World of Warcraft and make it the massively multiplayer game instead of just the massively online single-player drop-down menu game.
I think one of my biggest questions is, like, what are the chances of, say, Earthen Ring and Frostmane being linked? And I think the reason why I raise this question is because your realm is PvP and our realm is normal RP.
Is that possible? They will only link you with realms of the same type. PvP realms will be linked with other PvP realms. PvE realms will only be connected with other PvE realms. I'm not sure how RP is going to work, because RP realms historically have just operated as, if they're RP PvE, then they're just a PvE realm, and if they're RP PvP, they're just a PvP realm. So I wonder if they're going to give RP realms special attention, because I know for myself, I don't personally RP very often, but I know that people that do RP take their RP very seriously. It is an integral part of their gaming experience, as well as their just character experiences. They want to be around other people who are going to take RP seriously, not the people on Tychondrius that are like, gonna camp you, la 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 la. They, you know, they want their serious, like, I'm from the village of this and I've done all of these things, which is a very interesting part of the game for them, not for me, of course. And I think RP Realms might need some special attention as far as that goes.
Well, if they're going to merge us with somebody, I certainly hope they merge us with Moonguard.
Oh, of course. It's the number one selling point of World of Warcraft is the erotic roleplay in Moonguard. Like, that's why I bought the game.
Absolutely.
I wish I had a camera so you could see me just palming my face right now.
Well, as far as like PTR information, I'm not really seeing anything too dramatic. I think the data mining over on MMO Champion is pretty much kind of listed some nice new gear that we'll get to look forward to as far as like gearing alts, maybe even replacing a couple of item slots that are just kind of stubborn and you can't seem to get an upgrade for. So we'll have that to look forward to. And there's some other stuff on there that are just kind of update-ish from the devs.
There's the super cool, if you thought farming the, what is it, 99,999 dinosaur bones was difficult, the 100,000 timeless coins gives you a new cloud serpent. Which naturally means that I'm going to get that because I am a mount farmer, for those of you who know me.
Well, I wonder how the timeless coins will work. Like, I wonder if you can just throw together like a 40-man raid and just go out there and just mow everything down and everybody gets coins, or is that will not likely be the case?
I think it's interesting to note that the timeless isle, I believe, is only accessible by people that have their legendary, their epic cloak. I haven't read any information regarding that since they announced it, but there is either a part of that island or the island as a whole is only accessible to people who are caught up on their legendary quest.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I read that as well, but I also saw an update to that maybe last week sometime, I want to say, that if you have it on one character, it will be unlocked on your other characters, and that includes the world boss Ordos, because everyone was, well, I don't know if they're freaking out about it, but there were some big concerns, because Ordos required you to have the legendary cloak in order to fight him and get the loot from him, but they did clarify and say you can fight him as long as one of your characters on your account has the cloak.
I don't know if that doesn't seem...
fine for me.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine for me as well. I have my cloak, but for what about all the people that don't have that cloak that'll want to go out there?
Well, what I'm thinking is it's probably just going to be limited to Ordos and Ordos's specific area. I could be wrong, but I have a feeling that that's all it's going to be limited. And, you know, then the discussion is, well, what about the people who have... earn the cloak and get Ordos, and then the people that can't get Ordos because they never did it. Well, I mean, yeah, I think people deserve a reward for putting the time and effort in, and God knows how many weeks. I'm still working on mine, and I've been doing it since launch. So I don't mind it that it's just one world boss. It's not something that has to be done in order to progress in the game, and I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal once it's released.
Yeah, and anybody who is even remotely caught up on their legendary quest knows that it's the legendary quest, the little amount of skill that is actually required to complete your legendary quest comes in the very, very end of the chain. Yeah, the skill comes in at the end of the chain in the part that you pick to do with Rathian. I'm not gonna to reveal any of that to the people that haven't done it. But other than that, you know, collecting the sigils just takes time. Run your LFR every week. It's not limited to only normal. It drops an LFR. Those LFRs are pretty easy to get into in terms of item level, as well as they're very easy to complete because most people have done them before. Then the next part is just wait your 3 weeks in Cap Valor. Then the part immediately after that, collect runestones, or not runestones, Secrets of the Empire. More just waiting a couple weeks until you get all the drops. Then runestones, waiting a couple weeks till you get the drops. As well as in 5.4, they've already announced that they're letting the first 8 bosses are going to drop items for all parts of the quest. So if you're still on Sigils, the first 8 bosses in Siege of Orgrimmar on Flex, LFR, and Normal, and Heroic will drop whatever part of the quest you're on to help you catch up faster, as well as they're going to increase the drop chance of those items. So it's kind of like, I don't want to say at this point, if you haven't caught up on your legendary, you don't deserve to kill that world boss. But if you haven't caught up on your legendary, you don't deserve to kill that world boss.
Yeah, I mean, think of it as a quest reward. You know, you can unlock this boss in this area that he's in by doing the quest chain. And another thing they're doing with all the items, the sigils are now going to drop from Throne of Thunder. So if you're gearing that tune up and you want to work on the cloak, then just, you know, in the Throne of Thunder, you'll have chances to get all the, not only the secrets, but also the sigils and the runestones.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, and I have mixed feelings about this, but this world boss thing is almost kind of like pandering to people like me that enjoys a little exclusivity due to the fact that I put a lot of work and effort into my gear, and I'll get something special like, you know, access to a world boss that I'll have to hope there's enough other people on whenever I'm ready to do mine to go and do theirs, as opposed to let's group up for Undasta, anybody that can zone into Pandera can come do.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not like, you know, it's not like the previous legendaries that it's limited to a certain class and it's so rare you never see. It's something that anyone can get. It is the people's legendary, and I'm fine with that. I don't use that and mean that in a derogatory way, but it is available to everyone, and there are going to be plenty of groups going out there and doing it. I imagine, just like people still farm Nalak and Undasta now, they're going to be farming Ordos for quite some time.
It's something for you ready to go out and do before, I guess, you group up for your Flex raid. Or maybe after you finished a little early.
Yeah, in addition to like how everybody has access to it, people need to remember that this is an RPG. It is a role-playing game. The game is based around your character's development in either power level or story. And the following of the legendary quest, it tells the story of Rathian. For those of you that have done it, you know what I'm talking about when I say it tells the story of the next expansion. Like, when the next expansion's announced, there's going to be a lot of people that are like, yep, knew it, because they've done their Rathian quests, and it's the story is brilliantly crafted. The RP events with Rathian are just brilliant in-game cinematic. Everything about it is just so amazing. It is, you know, the Blizzard that we've known and loved over the past couple years of, you know, how many people remember the intro cinematic to World of Warcraft. You know, the music is going off, and then the bear and the dwarf come over the mountain and you see Ironforge for the first time, and you get that little giddy little kid feeling. That's what these cinematics and this legendary storyline has me like again. Like, I'm going back to when I was 15 and I'm playing Warcraft 3 and I'm like, oh my god, the story's so amazing. And it's Blizzard at Blizzard's finest. And even on Blizzard's bad day, they're still better than a lot of companies. And when Blizzard's at its best, they tell a story like no one else. Like, their storylines compare to, like, I know people are going to take offense to this, but like Tolkien, like Lord of the Rings story pales in comparison, in my opinion, to the way that Blizzard can tell their story.
Well, I can tell it in a different format. I might disagree with you on that, but they tell it in a different format, a visual format, which I think is more appealing, obviously, to the gaming community and those that enjoy it.
Well, whatever it is, it engages people on a lot of different levels.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, I kind of had a plan today, like what I think we should do. I'm going to have a little small announcement towards the end of the podcast today. So what I would like to do is kind of reflect over 5.2 and 5.3 what the raid encounter has kind of meant to each of us. So I think I'd just like to look back like at each boss and see if there's something that we thought was really good about the encounter or something that was really memorable to each of us. So I think to start it off, to discuss Jinrock, I'd have to say probably the most memorable or interesting thing to me about that mechanic was the way it kind of showed the capability of a tank. I did that fight many, many times with a lot of different groups on different servers, and I found 9 times out of 10 that the way the tanks managed him pretty much entailed how your entire raid was going to go for that night. And time after time, I would see a tank get tossed over to one marker. He'd create a pool, and then we'd go through that round of phase, go through the lightning storm, and then see the tank get tossed to a place that he meant to be tossed to. He executed the fight properly, and then that raid would go very well. And then time and time again, I'd see where a tank got tossed to the opposite side of the room, and then the room got split, and then that raid fell apart around Horadon or around the council, because you just got a peek into the mentality of like, were you prepared for this? Was this group prepared for this? And I liked how that fight kind of gave you a temperature of the raid. Eric, what can you offer us about that encounter?
As a tank, that fight is fantastic. It teaches it as an entry level encounter. Fantastic. Probably one of the best first bosses that Blizzard has ever put in. It has a little bit of something for everybody. It has a DPS movement mechanic, a DPS increase mechanic, a healing increase mechanic, a mechanic that if you don't handle it correctly, it wipes a raid, a tank swap. It just has everything in its simplest format, which is amazing. Amazing as a raid leader, that fight, if you can take a group in there and get them to understand that fight, players that don't understand it do not last very long in raiding. Players that pick it up very quickly last very, very long in raiding. Great entry-level mechanic or fight because of that. As a tank, that fight is fantastic. The debuff is not so punishing that if you mess it up for a couple seconds, you're dead. But it is also very punishing that if you try to ignore it, you're going to die, and there's no real way to ignore it. For me as well, it definitely does speak to a lot of the things that that raid leaders and people that organize raids that aren't necessarily raid leaders need to keep in mind. Lightning Storm, lots of raid damage requires coordinated use of group raid cooldowns, which is a thing that a lot of players just like, lol, I'm just going to pop Tranquility whenever I want, or lol, I'm just going to Aura Mastery whenever I feel like it. That, you know, requires a level of discipline of knowing when you're assigned to use your cooldown. DPS, if you're not in the pool, then you're doing less damage, so it kind of gives you the good standing point. Like, I need to stand here, I need to time my cooldowns in the pool so that I have them for the next pool, that kind of thing. And just overall, Jinrock was fantastic. Like, I can't really explain how just great of an entry-level fight that was for me.
All right. Well, Kung Pao, what can you speak to us about?
Arion, you pretty much said it all there, and I couldn't agree more. It was a great entry level fight. It is fairly easy. Everything's down to its core, and if you can't get it, you're gonna struggle with the rest of the way. But I think it's a great entry fight because you can't have, for example, Horadon, the next one we're going to go to, you can't have like a boss like Horadon as your first boss, because people are just going to look at it and say, man, there's 11 more bosses after this. I don't even want to be here anymore. So it really is a great entry-level fight, and I had a lot of fun with it. Being able to do it on Heroic is a lot of fun, how they changed up the Lightning Storm mechanic. But just an all-around enjoyable experience.
Let's say, moving on to Horadon, I'd have to say probably, for me, most memorable or enjoyable thing about that fight was LFR. I always did it as DPS, or would tank it from time to time. For me, for that fight, nothing too notable on normal. I'm sure everybody's done it at some time if you've done it on LFR, you've seen the fight. For normal, everything just hits a little harder. But I have to say my DPS experience on that fight, not one time ever did I ever lay a hand on a trash mob there. Not once. As soon as Cordon was active, I was 100% DPS on him. And I loved LFR for that because nobody bothered to yell at me. I was always the top damage. And as that LFR first opened up, like the first week I went in there, I was top damage on that fight because everybody else was dealing with adds while I scumbagged on Horadon the whole time and finished that fight like well over 200k DPS.
Yeah. It is a fun fight in LFR because you can just kind of ignore the mechanics, but you can do that with a few of the bosses in there. I'll say my most memorable moment, not necessarily my happiest memorable moment, was when I had to tank it in 10 normal. And that was, let's just say I'm DPS and I've been DPS since Burning Crusade for a very good reason. I'm not a good tank, even though warriors are probably the most mobile class out there for tanking. And I'm terrible at AoE tanking. So that's my most memorable moment.
Yeah, Horadon was definitely, I believe he was placed incorrectly in the instance in terms of difficulty, especially as we move forward. We'll get to bosses like Primordius and things like that that I feel should have come before Horadon. But Horadon, as a fight design and mechanically, Horadon is a very interesting fight, a very well-designed fight in the way that it works, being in the arena and having, like, the fans kind of jump in and fight you as well. Works out very well. It overall, the difficulty was too high for being a second boss in an instance, and just if it would have been maybe a little less difficult in the beginning. I know it went through a lot of balance changes and things like that as the weeks went on. But definitely going into that fight week one was very, very difficult, especially for 10-man raids. 10-man raids, I believe, since the start of the fight, since like the first week, the adds health has been nerfed, I believe, like 75% or at least 50% from what they were originally, just to make handling that fight manageable. But it's definitely overall a very, very good fight. The damage that you can do at the end when Horadon is taking 200% damage, it's just fun, to be honest, of just like being able to see all those big numbers, you know, see yourself crit for 2 million damage and things like that. So that's always good. The tanking on that fight is very good, very dynamic, gives you a good look at single tanking a boss that has a timed ability that hits very hard, as well as seeing your tank's ability to pick up and manage AoE mobs, casters, mobs that have cleave. Just overall, like a very well-designed fight, probably a little bit too early in the instance for a fight of that level of difficulty.
Yeah, I agree. It was a bit overtuned off the get-go, but it kind of made it definitely separated a lot of raid groups as far as like on the realms. Certain groups were able to get past it and moved on, and other groups had to wait a few more weeks to gear. So it was kind of a declination between, you know, quality of raid groups right off the bat. But moving on to council, I'd have to say I want to credit my experience with them, I think, to our prop Pally at the time that was tanking for us. He came up with a battle plan for the council where we were able to single tank that fight, and it literally took all the complication of the mechanics for our DPS completely out. Because what we were able to do with our prop Pally was he stacked his stam to where he had over 800k health, and every time he would get frozen by the Warlord, what we would do is our three healers at the time, I was playing Holy Pally, we had a Resto Druid, and we had a Priest at the time. We would rotate our cooldowns on him, our personal cooldowns. Like, I would give him a Hand of Sack. Our Druid would give him Iron Bark, and then our Priest would give him Pain Suppression. And what we would do is we would pull the encounter, he'd group all of them up in one big wad, and then we would just nuke the whole group down, allowing us to ignore the Shadow Loa, or not the Shadow Loa, but the Loa Spirit, because the cleave damage that were applied by our DPS basically made that little bit heal nil. It didn't matter. And then Soul went down super fast, and then we could switch to, I think we would literally kill him before, I think Frost Lord Malak would get empowered to about 30% by the time we would kill Soul. So like his empower never became an issue. It also took a lot of the other mechanics as far as target switching out of the hands of our DPS. All they had to do was just pick a dude and just nuke him. And it was a lot of fun in that respect for me.
Yeah, Council for me was, it's kind of a sentimental boss because that was the one where my raid team on Skullcrusher, where I was originally with my warrior, fell apart. And that's when I made the decision that I was going to move. I was going to move to AIE on Earthen Ring. And that's where I met you guys, you Hottest and Seafood and all the other guys. And so it's a bittersweet, if you will, because I had some great times on that one. And I really did love the concept of the fight, the council fight. And you're right, once we got it to where we could single tank it, the DPS really didn't have to do anything. In terms of just a fight, it was ridiculously easy for anyone who wasn't tanking or healing. But that one holds a bittersweet taste when I look back at it.
Yeah, Council is an awesome fight, in my opinion. You get to see all four troll tribes, which is awesome. I love trolls. I love everything to do with trolls. I love the references to Blanka being a street, or Blanka, Kozogen is Blanka from Street Fighter. I love the Frost King, Winter is Coming. The things I hate about that fight are anything to do with sand, anything to do with the fight in general, and anything to do with having to target switch to an ad, because apparently Chain Lightning is hard, bro. That fight was very, for me, difficult to explain and comprehend. As far as my raid experience with it, my group took a long time to learn every mechanic, and we still tend to have random problems with like frostbite and biting cold. And so for me, it's one of the fights that my group kind of ruined for me. I know a lot of people like the fight, and I do like that it, you know, has the trolls and everything. It's just a very unforgiving fight in the beginning, and it's gotten better as time's gone on, but from my first memories of it, it's definitely a fight that I am looking forward to never seeing again.
Well, I think I can't honestly think of a single positive thing to say about Tordos. Tordos for me is kind of like what Council was for you, Matt. It was the boss, and I'm not going to lay the blame at Tordos's feet. It was our group, but Tordos was the boss that broke our raid group. We had, I'm almost ashamed to say this, but I think we had over 100 wipes on that encounter before we killed it the first time. Matter of fact, I'm sure we had over 100 wipes. And it took weeks upon weeks of strategizing before we finally got the kill. And then when we finally got it, we were able to move on past other bosses right behind him. And then we came back after about 2 or 3 weeks. I think we took a break for the holidays. Then we came back, and we spent 3 consecutive nights. Our raid schedule for that group was, I think, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then we spent most of Monday night, we could not kill Tordos. We spent most of Tuesday night, we could not kill Tordos. We spent most of Wednesday night, could not kill Tordos. We spent the entire progression of that week not killing that boss. And I think it led up to a lot of frustration for people, and we ended up just parting ways. That boss, the RNG is not that complicated. There's not even a whole lot of RNG for that fight, but there are certain fights, unlike the council, where you cannot simplify it. It comes down to single raider accountability, and that boss is very punishing to groups that don't have a full 10 people where they can pay attention.
Yeah, and I'll tell you where I put the blame on that one, and that's honestly LFR. And that's because you think of an ability like Furious Stone Breath. In LFR, I don't even know it's going off, to be honest with you, other than the fact it looks like a giant sandstorm on my screen. Whereas in normal, if it gets one tick off, you're lucky to not wipe. And so I put a little bit of blame on that. That being said, yeah, it was kind of, that was another one where we had the issue with the team just kind of falling apart. But I actually like that fight, and I think it's more just from a melee standpoint with all the AoE. I was always on top of the meter, so my EP'n felt good, and, you know, it was just one of those type of fights.
Yeah, I would agree. I tanked the bats, and I'm a druid, so thrash is real hard, bro. And I was able to just, like, destroy and damage. And I mean, like, I heard you like turtles, bro, so I gave you turtles to kick at other turtles while you're kicking and attacking other turtles. Like, that was really cool for me, that, like, yeah. There's just, like, turtles everywhere. But as far as, like, for me as a tank and a player, it was very fun. Pretty easy to comprehend. As far as just, like, kill the bats, kill the turtles, kill the bigger turtle. As a raid leader, that fight destroyed my healing core. We went through 4 healers because of that fight alone, because they weren't able to handle the healing requirement from the Quake Stomp, which is very high, but they just weren't able to handle it. Got really frustrated with them, you know, not being able to handle it, and because it's pretty much the way we assigned it was each healer had a Quake Stomp, and, you know, when people die after your Quake Stomp, that's your fault. And people just got really, really frustrated, and a lot of people quit. A lot of healers specifically quit because of that, and it's just a fight for as a player. I loved it because I loved killing all the turtles. I loved the one-up achievement, you know, playing Mario Kart and kicking a green turtle shell at somebody. All of those, like, things were awesome, but for me as a raid leader, that fight was the fight that tried to kill my raid group. Like, not like kill my characters, it tried to murder my actual raid group.
Yeah, it was a difficult encounter. Now, Megara, on the other hand, Megara was kind of a flip-flop opposite for, I think, as far as accountability. Basically, you just had to be DPSing the right head and standing in roughly the right position. But as far as healing, especially for me, my memorable attempts there was on my Holy Pally, and it was absolutely brutal. That was an extremely challenging fight as a healer. I don't think even today, as geared as my Pally is, like I'm certainly ready for entry level heroics. I don't think I finished that fight ever not being either or very close to Oom. I had the opportunity to go, I think the last time I raided on my Pally, we killed every boss with a 2 healer setup, me and another priest, minus that boss and maybe 2 others. And even, like, I can't imagine that fight on heroic, but definitely the first time I killed that fight as a healer, that was my genuine sense of accomplishment in this tier.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those fights where you heal your rear off for the rampage and then hope that people are smart enough to get out of the giant green swirly thing, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. That was actually a lot of fun. And the thing I liked about Megara is that, and Arion's raid group does this, is they don't necessarily watch the videos. They don't necessarily strategize a lot beforehand. They find what works for them. And there are so many different ways you can kill that boss. And I've done it a number of different ways between the 10-man and 25-man teams. And it's really kind of fun to know that you can go in there and you can kind of play with that, you know, depending upon your raid comp and your strengths and weaknesses of your current composition. You can still down the boss in just a different manner.
Yeah, that's definitely, Megara was the fight that my group kind of got off of its knees from, you know, trying to pray to the god of Tordos killing our healers, and then just the different ways that that fight can go with the head combinations make it so that, like, every time we pull that fight, yeah, we're just DPSing ahead, sacking for rampage and spreading, but every time it's a new fight. All you do is just change your head combination, and you're just it's a completely new fight. I'm just looking at a different color because I'm a tank, and it's completely new and fun. As well as, for me, it's one of the fights that I'm a little bit inexperienced of a raid leader. I'd only been fully raid leading alone as far as like healing cooldowns and everything for about half a tier, about 4 months. So that fight, I was able to learn everything about how every cooldown worked, about how every healer had what cooldowns healers had, how each healing cooldown worked, and that really helped me grow as like a raid leader and help my raid start to trust my calls and trust that if I'm gonna make a call to call for this cooldown, I want that cooldown, and there's a reason for my madness. There's a method for what I'm talking about, and everyone learned from that. We gelled back together. We got good healers, and that was kind of the fight that put us back on course for success in the tier. And I just have nothing but good memories about Megara, except for, you know, all of the really, really bad loot that Megara drops, because she doesn't drop anything very good. And there's trash. There's too much trash on that fight, but...
Yeah, a lot of people argued against this tier being very trash heavy, but I said it from the get-go, way too much trash. It puts too much of a gap between the bosses, in my opinion.
Some of them are really quick, and then some of them are just too long. Like, Megara is just too long, where when you compare it to, like, from Ironquan to Council, it's like one pull. Or Ironquan to Twins is one pull. Yeah.
Like, from Jinrock to Hordon, the distance you travel is not very far, but the amount of trash between and the time it takes to deal with that trash as you move along can eat up a bunch of time.
Oh, yeah. For a boss that takes you 10 minutes to kill, you're spending 25 minutes on trash. It's just a little bit too far. I understand the need for trash just to fill, like, space and actually have something to, like, do. And to give you, like, you know, the random purple drops, but sometimes there's just too much of it. And then sometimes there's too little, and some people will be like, oh my god, how can you ever say that there's too little trash? Like, oh my god, TOC, greatest instance ever. But, you know, the trash does help you practice mechanics. Like, that's what trash is there for. And if I can see a mechanic a couple of times on the trash, then I know that I can learn it for the boss. That's at least how my brain works. But if I'm seeing a mechanic 75 times on the trash, then I'm just, like, burnt out of it and I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of the trash before a certain encounter will kind of give you a preview to what you're going to deal with, and that is kind of nice, so that if you've seen it before and then there's people in your group who have not seen the encounter, you can point out, this mob's fixing to do something, watch what he does, because you're going to see it again in the fight. That's kind of a helpful tool. But moving on to Jakun, I can't think of anything particularly great about the encounter other than that it was a nice break in difficulty, I think, for everybody. It was not a very challenging fight. Typically, if you got to that point, you knew you were going to get to see Darumu. As long as you had a few people that could fly and kill juveniles, you're pretty well good to go on the fight. It was not a very punishing fight to heal. I've tanked it. It's a pretty easy tank fight. I've never had to deal with, like, flying around as a DPS. So I can't speak to that. But definitely was a nice ease off the throttle, and I did appreciate that during the encounter.
Yeah, I'll say that from a DPS perspective, that was a lot of fun. The nest mechanic in there was something very unique. I don't know that I've ever seen it before. And it was a lot of fun learning. And I'll tell you what, when I thought it couldn't get any harder, the heroic version is just, everyone in the team has to be on top of that nest mechanic. And it's just a great cooperative effort, and it was a lot of fun. That mechanic's a blast.
Oh, yeah. Jakun has a lot of things that I like about a fight. I can go into Boomkin form and fly around a room with golden wings on my already, like, Boomkin-formed wings. You know, excellent, like, shout out to whoever thought of that. That was a brilliant mechanic because I love the way my Boomkin form looks when it's actually flying through the air. As well as the fight itself rewards smart play. Smart play being good timings on your feed youngs. The more feed youngs you're able to get, the more damage you can do. I love fights that reward players for being smart and doing things that they aren't necessarily told to do and that they develop on their own. I love that. The heroic mode is just the normal mode, but better in every single possible way by having everyone fly, having the tanks have to fly, and just everything's amazing. The fight is very solidly designed in that the mechanics don't just like randomly kill you unless you take 4 stacks of Talon Rake, which you know you're not supposed to do, so it's not surprised that you're not surprised that you died. The healing is amazing from Quills. Just everything about that fight is a very, very well put together encounter. It's a solid middle of the tier fight, unique mechanics, and it's definitely a fight that will always stick out in my mind for being very well designed, as well as Elegon. She is a whore and does not drop my mount. Ever. I've killed her so many times, and I've never seen the mount. That's why I will remember you, Jakun. Because you don't drop my mount.
You'll see it about 4 expansions from now.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I have 700 million HP. My offhand weapons DPS is 400,000.
Well, not if we get scaled back, but we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. Alright, so moving on to Darumu. I have to say, I thought the use of mechanics for that fight were pretty novel, and definitely my most memorable, or the thing that I enjoyed most about that fight, is kind of my little E-peen chip on my shoulder. A couple of things. Once, I have never once died in the maze, ever, on any character. I have never once been knocked off the platform by force of will. Now, I have been bounced off the platform more than a few times by the ads when you're doing the trash previously to him, but during the encounter, I've never died in that encounter to some kind of silly mechanic that I wasn't paying attention to. And when I was progressing through that fight the first time on my tank, I felt like the guy that I was tanking with was a little slow to grasp the encounters because he kept dying over and over again to the same mechanic, so I was kind of helped work him through his issues, which was kind of nice. It gives you a sense of accomplishment when you see someone struggling and you can help them out. But the overall mechanics of the fight I thought were really good, in my opinion. I know a lot of people didn't really care for that fight, but I truly enjoyed it myself.
Yeah, I liked it all right. It wasn't my favorite fight, but I don't think it was the worst one in the instance of by any means. The mechanics were, again, pretty unique, and I did enjoy the maze, except when I was the one with the beam. So, you know, I just, I didn't like being the responsible one there, because I, that was one fight that I did like to AFK on during LFR.
Yeah, what can I say about Darumu? Darumu, you need to wear a monocle because that would make you way funnier. The maze, good mechanic, shows who the bads in your group are. The light spectrum, very interesting mechanic. My most memorable moment comes from that fight where I'm yelling at people to stand in the correct color, and like we could have had a kill if people just stood in the correct color. And I'm just like, how hard is it to stand in the right color? And three people queue in and go, I'm red, blue, colorblind. I can't, or I'm red, green, colorblind. All the beams look the same color to me. And I'm like, are you serious? And they're like, yeah, every time you call for a color to stack, I don't know what color. I just like find a person and follow them. And it, like, my whole world of what I thought about everything came crashing down because I realized that people are actually colorblind that play WoW. And that mechanic really, really is difficult if you can't tell all the beams apart.
That is hilarious.
Can't really yell, like, stand in the slightly less gray one! Doesn't sound as good as stand in the red beam!
Yeah. Well, I mean, all that is needed to fix that issue is just, hey, call it out who's got what. But I understand where they're coming from. That's something, you know, that maybe they don't want to talk about, and so they didn't mention it. They just thought they could get away with it. You know, unfortunately, if it had been mentioned, it probably would have not been a big deal at all.
Yeah, that's one of those things, like, it's their, you know, their stuff. It never came up, and I never knew. I'd raided with these guys for months on end, and I'd been calling out colors to go to and shapes to go to and stuff like that, and it had never been a problem before, and it was just interesting that Blizzard found, like, the one fight, that one mechanic that, like, I was able to take for granted that certain other people weren't. That fight was well-tuned. Being the seventh boss, he was the step up in difficulty that was needed. When we get to the next boss, we'll talk about how Darumu was very well designed for where he was in the instance, and then Primordius shows up and your entire life is let down because Primordius is like a giant letdown.
Yeah, let's move on to Primordius. I can't honestly say I tank that fight every week. I've healed it many, many times. I can't think of a whole lot that has ever impressed me with that fight. I guess the only thing that I really enjoy about it is on my Holy Pally, when I get mutated, I'm a giant lizard running around with wings on my back, and my Light of Dawn looks absolutely amazing.
Yeah. My fight, we actually one-shot that on my Skullcrusher group, so that was a blast.
Yeah, we two-shotted it during progression. Very unimpressive in terms of difficulty. Very aesthetically unimpressive. I mean, you get a turn into a lizard. His voice sounds like Gollum from Lord of the Rings, so there's like some novelty factor there. He's actually a lizard boss, you know, one of the the Sarauks that we actually get a fight because we've been, pillaging their lands and destroying their entire villages on the Isle of Thunder. It's kind of nice to actually get them to defend themselves, but they definitely picked the wrong champion to send into Throne of Thunder to try and win back their honor as a race because he's terrible.
Yeah, that fight, I think, was a letdown for most people. It's, I don't know, maybe they should have undertuned Horde on a little bit more and gave some of that to Primordius.
Yeah.
And then Iron Quan was...
Dark Animus is next.
Oh, yeah, we're going to skip Dark Animus. We can't skip old Dark Animus. I didn't get to see his encounter until rather late in my raiding progression. I think probably a month ago I got my first kill on him, and then the rest of the bosses fall pretty quickly behind him. But that fight, I still don't understand all of the mechanics with that fight, because oddly enough, the highest difficulty of that fight is managing your little adds. Once you have those under control, the fight is just nuke and kill. And I'd have to say, as a tank, I seem to grasp my job rather quickly. So I would notice at times when the tank wasn't sure which add to pull or where we needed to be, it was a forgiving enough fight that I could jump in, take control, and say, bring that mob over here. I could throw a mark on him, kill him in this spot, and then we were able to move on. So it allowed a lot of room for people to offer useful bits of information during the fight without wiping the raid group, as long as, like, there weren't five people all trying to do that at the same time.
Yeah, it was a strange fight in that regard, that as the fight went on, it actually got much easier. But again, it's unique, it's new. I enjoyed it a lot. I didn't enjoy necessarily learning about it as much, because I think I had a better understanding than some of my team when we did our first polls on it. And unfortunately, I'm not great at explaining what's going on. So I knew what was happening, but I couldn't really, communicate to them what was going on in a good way. So it took a while, but we did get it down. And I actually, it's a lot of fun. It's kind of boring after you get the small ads down, but overall, a fun fight.
Yeah, Dark Animus is definitely a fight that is completely different on normal mode compared to LFR, as well as even 10-man to 25-man. It's mechanically pretty simple. Each ad only has, I believe, three abilities. But the difficulty comes in that you can wipe 15 seconds in because somebody got 2 inches too close to another ad. The ad's linked, they deal 500% extra damage, and everybody's dead. And that can just randomly happen because of the way mob positioning works, where, like, people have seen it where a melee mob is meleeing you, and then it readjusts its position, where it'll back up and then come back at you again to get in melee range. That can kill you on the Dark Animus fight. That's very frustrating, but overall that fight is a giant math equation set in a three-dimensional realm. It's a fantastic fight, in my opinion, on that level. It takes a lot out of your raid leader to understand how the timings work, how the math on the anima works, and how to prolong the fight as long as possible, as well as the better you get at the fight, the more mechanics you ignore. So you actually don't have to activate certain ads that make the fight easier because you're better at handling other mechanics. So that's very, very fun. It's a very, very interesting fight. It's frustrating that you can wipe so quickly, but the actual difficulty when you get it down and the group comes together and no one does anything stupid and, like, links their ad and everybody dies because somebody linked their ad, it's very, very frustrating. Overall, Boomkins, I hate you. Starfall is the worst ability in the game because if it procs a crit and it's hitting every mob in the room, the mobs die too early, they die in the wrong places, anima goes everywhere, and everybody dies. Outside of that, it's a pretty good fight. It's probably one of my favorite fights because I just can mentally do all of the adding and subtracting and timing in my head on that fight. For whatever reason, my mind is just, like, tuned to, like, Dark Animus' frequency, and I just understand that fight completely. My group understood the fight really well, so our progression on it was very, very fast, very, very fun. And every week, with the setup being a little different, it's a unique experience every week, so it's not just coming back and killing the same boss every week. Even though it is the same boss, it's similar to Magar, and it's just different enough that it feels new.
Yeah, the positioning of the ads is always different, which kind of keeps the fight fresh, I suppose. Let's see.
Definitely.
I think Iron Quan is our next boss. To see what I liked or disliked about Iron Quan, the effects on the ground. I can almost kind of sympathize with people with the green-red color blindness because I have effects on the ground blindness. I step in every single line on the ground like it's a crack and it must break my mama's back. I don't know why I have so much trouble with that, but that fight really challenges me. I also played a bear tank and tornadoes for some reason. I think bear tank's hitboxes are 5 times the size of everyone else's. And for some reason, I always seem to have aggro issues on that fight, and I never could figure out why.
Yeah, this one was... I've been trying to think of something that I really loved about this fight, and honestly, there's really nothing that's fantastic about it that I really, really enjoyed. It was a good fight, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't outstanding.
And if I could make one more complaint, Iron Quan seems to have a really, really good knack for giving you what was it, what's the thing you need for the legendary quest? The Titan Runestones. He was always really good. He would give almost everybody I do their Titan Runestone for the week, plus the one you got for Lei Shin. But come to normal, I think he drops, what, the shoulder token?
Yes.
He will not give your group the shoulder token you need. I have seen this time and time and time and time again. He will not give you the token you need. He will make you vendor or shard it every time.
Yeah, he's definitely stingy with his loot. My group doesn't have a hunter, so naturally we've seen like 3 Thunderforged weapons drop that we just shard. The ground effects need to be better. They're like little lines of lava or little lines of like lightning, and they just look like crap. Hard to see, hard to maneuver. I want to know whoever designed the tornadoes that decide that your group, it deserves to be hunted down as if you are a wanted fugitive from the FBI. Those tornadoes have hunted me for like 30 seconds where I'm a druid, so I'm kitty form sprinting, and it is following me. Like, I want to congratulate whoever came up with that AI, because it hunted me down. Like, I felt like there was nowhere I could hide. There's a couple of bugs with the windstorm mechanic. I wish warlock portals, for whatever reason, you can get grabbed out of a warlock portal mid-transit. A lot of groups use the warlock portals to get out of the middle of that, and it's very frustrating. I don't know if it was by intent to make it harder, but just the sheer like randomness of it made it very annoying and very frustrating, especially when you are having wipes because two healers randomly get grabbed that have never been grabbed before, and then a DPS gets picked up while I'm still stunned in the middle before I've been able to move. I'm already in a tornado. That's very, very frustrating to me. But there was really nothing good about that fight, except you got to see a lot of dogs. And then the hard mode, that the dogs all come out together and try to eat you. But really, overall, unique mechanics, not an interesting fight. Poor visuals in terms of the actual what the abilities look like. And Fist Smash is like a pretty lame excuse of a boss ability for somebody who's supposed to be like the guy that Lei Shin like keeps closest to him. You know, yeah, it's his personal like his bodyguard. Top lieutenant. Yeah, it's as the I think he's like the general of his armies. It's like the general of the army. What can you do? Throw a temper tantrum and beat your fist on the ground? I know an 8-year-old that can do that in a supermarket and is probably a little bit more effective than you.
Yeah, it was. Pretty much, if you got to that point in the fight, unless all your healers were oom, you knew you had it.
Yeah, he just keeled over and died at that point. Twin Consorts is next. I guess I'll say my piece about Twin Consorts first. There's two of them. They each have unique abilities, and all of their abilities suck. And you don't need to use the celestial drawing ability that to actually kill that fight. It actually makes it harder because one of your DPS or healers can't actually DPS and heal while they're drawing. So actually using the mechanics in the fight make the fight harder. And it's basically the additional trash pool before you get to the Lei Shin trash. And just everything about that fight was just poorly designed, poor difficulty level. The way the mechanics work sometimes just makes no sense. The just overall general fight atmosphere, when you get to that point, you're expecting like, oh man, these are the only two female Moga we've ever seen. They're probably like crazy. And then they're just like crap. It's really disappointing for that to be the boss right before Lei Shin. Let's put Horridon right before Lei Shin, because, you know, Horridon is a Triceratops with freaking laser cannons. Instead, we have the sisters that fight like little girls and don't actually work correctly.
I almost have to wonder if maybe that fight's mechanics were meant to be like they had a different idea and then realized it either didn't work or they couldn't get it to work in time, and then basically just took away half of the mechanics. It probably would have made that fight really, really cool and then just kind of just made it easy mode because I don't know, maybe they just ran into some kind of logistical issue that they couldn't sort out in time.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that they did. I mean, how many people have ever had tanks will know this. How many tanks have been sitting there going, need an ice comet, I need an ice comet, I still need an ice comet, because the timing is just, like, off, where you're like, there should be an ability here. And for me, that's really frustrating. When the fight feels like something should be happening, like, there should be something here, and there's not, it makes me very nervous. And it's just a poorly designed fight, in my opinion, which for a 13 boss instance, if you count each boss and it's hard mode is one, I consider them two. Normal mode is one boss fight, and then the hard mode is a different one. Being the one boss fight that I feel is very poorly designed is not bad on Blizzard's part. It's just really frustrating that it happened so far in the instance, so deep in the instance, and so close to Lei Shen. You know, you're the 11th boss. You're the gatekeeper before the final boss. You have to show me something. I shouldn't get to you and be like, can I go AFK?
Yeah, historically, Blizzard has always done pretty good lead-up bosses. I mean, if you think back to last tier, Lin Shi, that was a challenging fight. Amber Shaper's challenging fight. Elegon, very challenging fight. You go back even further, Spine of Deathwing, very challenging fight. I don't know, it's like they just dropped the ball on this one.
Yep, Majordomo Staghelm and Firelands was a challenging fight. Depending on who you count as the final boss, before either Cho'Gall or Sinestra, for even Tier 11, it was Ascended Council or Cho'Gall himself. They're all really good fights, and then you have Twin Consorts, and it's just like, really? You're going to put Twin Consorts on the same level as, like, Syndragosa, things like that, and it's just very, very disappointing.
Yeah, I think most groups just kind of looked at it as free loot. Matt, what can you say about the fight?
I mean, just beating a dead horse here. You guys pretty much said everything. It was another one of those one-shots for the Skullcrusher group, and to be honest, that should not happen in as a little last boss before the final boss of the tier. It was kind of ridiculous, and we went into it. We raided till midnight, and we went into it at 5 till, and we downed the thing 3 minutes after. It was very disappointing.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one and only time I've even come remotely close to wiping on that fight was one of the times I was two healing it with the priest, and he forgot that you're not supposed to heal the tank that has the Beast of Nightmares, and he basically just killed himself, so I'm healing the raid by myself. And this guy is the raid lead, and Meatball decides, nah, don't brez me, just go ahead. So I solo healed the thing all the way until we get to where both of them are out at the same time, and I was like, yo, gotta brez him, I don't think I can heal this by myself. And we picked him up and finished the fight.
And last one, Lei Shen.
I don't know, you guys want to talk about the trash up to him? Because in Tin Man, the trash was never complicated, but I'd rather gouge out my own eyes than do the trash before him in LFR.
Oh, dude, that trash is more complicated. Like, I would rather fight a Jinrock while riding, like, Jinrock riding Horrodon than that trash. That trash is a, like, an abomination. It is worse than the Horrodon, like, River of Death trash, where it's just like, lol, you got bounced off and now you're dead. And it's just, that trash sucks.
Yeah, it was really frustrating. And it never failed. You would run up the stairs with their lightning beams. I don't know why that was there. It was just something goofy to have. But people would try to stop because there was a break right at the top of the stairs. And there'd always be the priest, the warlock, somebody that was a cloth thief. They'd run up, pull the boss, boom, they get flattened. So now you're down a DPS or you're down a healer. And your tanks would have to scramble to pick them up and put them in position. It was always just a cluster.
Yeah, it's pretty sad when running up a flight of stairs is harder than multiple bosses have been. Like, it's really quite sad.
I will say one of the favorite things that I've ever done in LFR is run up that stairs and put on Aspect of the Pack while the lightning's going out.
They need to remove it.
You can run up and click the displacer pad that takes you to Lation's platform as well.
Yeah, you can. I don't mean to be a troll, but I never got so much enjoyment as when I did that in LFR.
Alright, so Lation, the last boss. He's another one that, well, due to progression, I got to see him very late in my attempts for this patch. He was, in my opinion, one of the more awe-inspiring bosses. When I got to kill him, it allowed me to put my goals at rest. Those were my goals for this tier, was to kill Lation, get my ahead of the curve achievement, and I was able to do that. And he sent me off in a very grand fashion. That fight, everything about that fight was good, in my opinion. It was challenging. It was complicated. The degree of difficulty was just right. I honestly can't think of a bad thing to say about that encounter.
Yeah, it was really, really fleshed out. I've had a lot of fun with it. I haven't downed it on my Hunter yet. I came close a couple times, but did it on my Warrior in 25, and it was a lot of fun. It wasn't super challenging, but the group I was running with was also extremely overgeared and had done it a number of times. But it was really well fleshed out and really well done, and I enjoyed the mechanics of it a lot.
I would definitely agree. Lation, you know, when he does his speech and he's like, you have earned my ire. Like, I'm always just like, oh man, daddy's home. Daddy about to beat me. Like, the fight is just, it's really, really well designed. He has good mechanics. They work well together. There's a couple of ways to cheese the mechanics, but overall they're just well put together, well designed. They function correctly, and just, it's just good. Like, it's just overall, like, the whole package is just good. Good fight, good RP, good length, like, duration of fight. It's not this, like, crazy long, like, 12-minute long fight that, you know, you just feel like is dragging on forever. But it's also not this, like, that's it? Like, that's the final boss? And, you know, he dies in spectacular fashion. He's not like, oh, it was merely a setback. He's just like, he's the Lord of Lightning. He blows up into lightning, and it's just like, whoa! Like, it's just, oh my god, amazing. Like, everything about that fight is good, well thought out, well designed, and just, it's a great way to be the final boss of the tier. I have not done the hard mode, I've only done it on normal mode, but from what I hear from people that talk about the hard mode is the, you know, best fight ever that Blizzard has ever designed. And based just on the normal mode, like, I would agree, it's got everything that you look for. It's got the great end to the story, the definite villain getting what's coming to him, the good, like, you actually fight him for a long enough time that you feel like you're fighting him, and it's just everything about it is just, like, really, really solid.
Yeah, I like the way, because there's too many times when you finally kill a boss, and when it's all said and done, like, half the raid group's just like, meh, that's cool, let's see the loot. I mean, every time I do it, like, there's always someone that cheers, even after I've done that fight, like, 8 or 9 times in the same group. Someone still cheers, like, they still feel that first, you know, kind of excitement, like, the first time you did it. And then it's rare to run across an encounter that gives you that feeling. I mean, even, like, talking about the hard mode, I was bored the other night, so I said, I'll just go over to Twitch and see what's going on there. And I come across Rignarose's stream, and he was streaming a hard mode kill on Lation. So I was like, well, I'll just watch this. And they were towards the end of the fight whenever I got into the stream, and it's just screaming. Like, there's 25 people all just yelling in the middle of this fight, like they're doing it like it's progression first time. I mean, so obviously, you know, I mean, they do it 25 man in a hard mode. I mean, it's got to be an extremely challenging fight for a hard mode.
Yeah, he's, you know, like he says, I am the Thunder King. Like, he is the Thunder King. And he does not mess around. Like, he, if you don't take him seriously, he still jacks your tanks up. He still, like, can deal a lot of damage if your raiders don't pay attention. Like, just everything about the fight is just amazing. Like, you know, the movement around the platform, the personal responsibility that everybody has during intermissions, just every single part of that fight, you have to be focused. Like, and for me, that's just excellent. Like, I love having to actually focus and play the game. Like, it's not a long time to focus, but it is just pure 100% focus on what I'm doing and playing the game. And I feel like I play really well on Lei Shen compared to what I do to other fights. I'm sure other people feel the same, where they're like, I just can focus really well on this fight. Just Lei Shen, like, I still remember our first kill. Just the screams. The, oh, kill it! You know, 2%. Come on! The person, like, that dies to Thunderstruck, that's like, oh, I died to Thunderstruck! The, shut up, stop, Clairefed, we gotta kill this! Just all that, just every time I kill it, like, even on my alts, those memories come back of how freaking epic that guy actually is. And it's just, I'm so glad that, you know, he's dead. I'm done with him. I'm ready to go on to Siege of Orgrimmar. And just everything like that. He's a very satisfying kill. Like, you know, you're like, all right, I killed Lei Shen. You're not like, and who's next? You're just kind of like, okay, I killed him. I conquered the Thunder King. I saved the Pandaren from their oldest enemy. Let me take a break before I go take on Garrosh.
Yeah, I really hope they make Garrosh live up to it, because that was really an epic fight.
And I'd have to say, definitely my most memorable thing about that fight was we struggled on the mechanics as far as managing the intermissions for probably, I think, our first night. By the second night, we had a really good handle on it. So we're moving along. We got through the first intermission. On the second round of dealing with the pillars, he adds the ability Fusion Strike. And he whacks me, sends me flying. I'm positioned properly on the platform, so my off tank picks him up and starts moving him. While I hit my leap and I zoom back to him, I'm like, sure, I got this. Other tank has him. He gets sent flying. I pick him up, take him to the last platform, and tanking him. He does the lightning strike, the thing where he puts out the big conal damage in front of him. And I always forget that he's going to do Fusion Slash like right after that, so I'm not paying attention. And he just takes his four iron and just chips me right off the edge of the platform. And I'm like, it's okay, I got this. I click the button and fall straight down. I had forgot that if you're knocked off of an edge that you can't retrieve from, it won't matter if you click your button or not. You just fall to your death. And that was our best attempt. And all nine other people in the group felt the need to tell me that I am such a baddie.
Yeah, we had one like that where, like, I had angled myself improperly, so I got punted. Usually we get punted parallel to the edge, so you just get punted right along, and then you move to the next pillar, and I had an angle. So I was going off the edge, and, like, I turn my camera to look where I'm going to land so I can just run, and I go, I'm not going to make the platform. And our priest hears, I'm not going to make it, and life grips me. And I land on the platform, and, like, I'm standing in my, like, I stand up out of my chair, like, throw my chair behind me when I stand up, because I'm just like, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen! Like, it was just absolutely, like, the level of, like, just priest. Like, it was just like, and that's why I play priest, that it was, like, was just fantastic. Like, Lei Shen has so many good memories and so little bad memories compared to most of the other fights in there. I mean, he's the final boss for a reason. He gives you your feat of strength for a reason. And, you know, Blizzard did a really good job with him. I killed Shaw of Fear for ahead of the curve, and I killed Lei Shen for ahead of the curve. And Shaw of Fear was good, was satisfying, but Lei Shen was just like, yeah, where you're just like, all right, killed the final boss. I am one bad SOB. Like, don't mess with me, Thunder King. I killed you. You're more like the afraid of Thunder King. Am I right? That's how my group is now whenever we kill him. They're like, lol, not the Thunder King. I'm the Thunder King. More like the Thunder Queen.
All right, well, I think that'll pretty much wrap us up. I had promised we were going to discuss revealing something here towards the end of the show. So we have been discussing as far as, like, where do we want to go with the show? We've established that we are a rating podcast. We enjoy discussing encounters, things to look forward to, where we stand in our rating, and how we are able to interact with each other. So we want to go a few steps further. What we would like to do is we're going to wait a few more weeks for 5.4 to come out so that we have some more juicy information to discuss. And we also want to offer a better podcast experience for everyone. So we are looking to maybe go out and perhaps get a website for people to go to, maybe even improve the quality of our podcast for our listeners. Everyone, you know, if you listen to a podcast, you want to be entertained and you'd like to get information along with it. So if we can improve our entertainment value, that's definitely a goal for us. So hopefully when we come back, we'll be new and improved, and something you guys can all enjoy. So in the meantime, how can we keep up with you guys, Arion?
As always, I'm on Twitch.tv/Arion. I'll be streaming all of my guild raids. I have a Twitter. I don't necessarily use Twitter as much, but that is at Arion as well. Best way to keep up with me is definitely follow me on Twitch. Watch me stream my raids. Watch me fail to things like hard mode scenarios. I always enjoy talking to the people in my stream chat. Some of them are pretty funny. I encourage everybody to stop by and check it out. Especially as the new tier comes out, I'm going to be streaming all of our progression raids, so you get a first class look, first hand look at how my guild handles progression, as well as how a relatively progressed guild goes through brand new encounters that they've never seen before.
You'll be streaming our flex raids too, I assume.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely be streaming flex raids. I'll pretty much be streaming anytime I'm in a group of more than five people. My stream just happens to turn on. I don't know. It must be a bug with my computer or something. But yeah, I'll be streaming anything that I do in a group of more than five people, just so people can see what it's like to be in a raiding guild, to be a raider. From my perspective, I'm a tank and a raid leader, so it gives people a unique perspective as opposed to just being, you know, DPS number six. That's the best way to follow me, though. Just follow me on Twitch.
Kung Pao, how can we keep up with you, sir?
I am on Twitter at Kung Pao Panda AIE, and I've got moved into my new place. I'm a little more active on there now. Finally getting my schedule down and getting some quality WoW time in. So hit me up on Twitter there.
Awesome, awesome. All right, if you want to write into the show, we are at wowraidcast@gmail.com. We love any kind of questions or comments or rants you would like to send our way, especially to Arion. Also, we have a new Twitter account that we have recently put up. It's WoW, at WoWRaidCast. That's at WoWRaidCast. Feel free to shoot us a Twitter message or I don't know, what do you call that? Is it subscribe or...
Follow.
Follow.
Yeah, feel free to give us a follow over at WoWRaidCast on the Twitter. And that is all for today, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good one.
Later, everybody.